And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman Report. It's Thursday, February 27, 2025. You know what? I'll tell you what. I am about as tired as I have ever been in my life. I'm tired. I don't know about you. Are you feeling just like fatigued? No, this is not a commercial. I'm just asking. Man, I'll tell you what. Is it the weather? Is it some sort of whatever? I mean, I just like can't. I mean, my get up and go, got up and went. I'm telling you, it did. I feel like Joe Biden almost, not mentally, but in terms of the, I don't know. I could do the shuffle, the Biden shuffle, and feel normal, I think.
Anyway, jibbity nonsense.
Yeah. And Eric the Tech is nursing a head full of mucus. So anyway, yeah. Kids
bring it home.
Seriously, Eric the Tech is like the studio Petri dish. If it's out there, he will attract it and get it. So, I don't know. We're going to be joined by Josh Mez here coming up, because we got a lot to talk about. I mean, just a lot. Before I get into the things that we do need to talk about, and boy, is there a lot. A couple of things. First, let me give you this. Let me take a break here and talk about healthwithdoug.com. That's healthwithdoug.com. If you look at a 2024 study, it found collagen, for example, or collagen supplements, they can boost skin hydration by 14%, improve elasticity by 23%, reduce wrinkles by 20% in just 12 weeks. I don't know whether you knew that or not, but this is your sign to use collagen. To transform your skin from the inside out. Sadly, though, most collagen products are typically found on the store shelves. They're just really not up to par at all. They're junk. That's why I've been using this amazing product for the past, it's been a couple of years. Yeah. And look, I love the results. Unlike other collagen supplements, this collagen uses top five collagen types of collagen for skin health. This premium collagen blend works together to help reduce visible signs of aging, reduce wrinkles, promote a youthful glow, and promote elasticity and skin hydration. I had a problem with that. I did. Yeah. Not no more. I just, what would I do is I mix it into a morning slurry, if you will. It's what I call it. I'm on a health kick, kind of. Seriously. I used to mix it in other drinks, but orange juice specifically. But now it's like a slurry. Look, it handles the rest after I drink it. So try for yourself. Start healing your skin. Place your order while it's 51% off now only at healthwithdoug.com. Plus, you're going to receive a bunch of goodies, like free VIP live health and fitness coaching for life, a free ebook titled 14 Foods for Amazing Skin, a 60-day satisfaction guarantee, and free shipping. That's right. If you order now, you got to do it now. That's right, now. All right, so put your slowly walk away, grab your device, and order now. This offer is only available at healthwithdoug.com, healthwithdoug.com. Okay. Again, thank you. Thank them for helping support our program. Appreciate that. All right. Now, I moved my show prep. Didn't I tell you on Monday? Remember my opening rant? My wife, she says, I really hate, I hate it when you do that. I hate those. I just stop it. Stop it. I said, but was I wrong? It doesn't matter. And she was correct. But didn't I tell you about, essentially what I'm talking about is overpromising and underdelivering. You know, the fact that, oh, wait a second, I've got something, and you're going to see it. Case in point today, the Epstein files. On Monday, I was talking about something I'm still waiting for. I don't know. That's a Swalwell tape, 90 minutes of audio, video, whatever it might be, that would possibly be a career ender for Swalwell. I don't know. Social influencers, you know. That's why I don't consider myself a social influencer. I don't want to be one. No. I don't want to be any kind of investigative journalist. I'm not that. I'm not a journalist. I'm not a social influencer. I don't.
Got to get you in your Speedo.
My Speedo. Who would I influence then? Maybe Adam Schiff. No, probably not.
With a pride flag.
Well, just a pride colored Speedo. Or pride flag coming out my. No, never mind. What a sight that would be. I wouldn't even
taste the rainbow.
Taste the rainbow. I can't even look at those rainbow lollipops anymore. You know, the one. Anyway. Yeah. Eric the Techie, you're my man. So there's something I want to go over with you. But again, before that, I just want to say we're still waiting on that, aren't we? We haven't seen any career-ending 90-minute video audio. What we did see was a 1 minute, 2 second clip of pretty much a one-sided investigation where allegations are being thrown at Swalwell, and his responses are grunts, groans, and other bodily noises. So okay. Now we move to yesterday, and the same thing. Yeah, excuse me. You know what? Again, frog throat, post nasal drip. You've got that head clog. I've got this constantly. This post nasal drip that is absolutely just. I don't know. Maybe it's because, you know, I've been sniffing too much baking powder or something, you know, in the straw. No, it's just one of those things. Ever since I had that run-in with COVID or whatever that crap was, I've had this post-nasal stuff going on. Anyway, and I take stuff to, like, stop it. You think it works? No.
Sad.
I was waiting for that. So Josh Schmidt is with me. Now we haven't really, we met briefly before the show. Didn't really talk about the show. I've got some show prep. A lot has to do with the Epstein situation. You and I spoke about, social influencers. I don't want to be one, but at the White House, and I've got video clips. Perhaps the best video clip, I would just want to say this to you, is from Raheem Kassam explaining what happened today at the White House. Now, obviously, we didn't get what we paid for. We didn't get what we expected. We got nothing but open source information. But before we get into that, there's something else. Actually, Josh Mez alerted me to this today. I didn't even know about it. But let's bring Josh on. Josh, how are you, sir?
Hey, nice to be with you tonight.
Yeah, nice to have you. Second time in just a couple of hours seeing you. You don't look right? Any
yeah.
Different.
Okay. As I did 10 minutes ago, probably.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it was kind of interesting. When we met earlier today, I had no knowledge. In fact, I was trying to sneak about half hour's worth of sleep in on the couch, and Mez walks in and alerts me to something I put in the chat earlier. And here's what's weird. Well, I'll tell you something else that was weird, but I'll leave that go. So anyway, you want to tell people?
Because it's congratulations, by the way, but You were featured in the New York Post article today for your investigative work on the assassination attempt in
yours
of Donald
too.
Trump and Butler. Yeah, well,
you're one. I mean,
yeah, well, you're the, you know, you're the face of the company, so.
Sad. I can't do that. Sad. Josh came in and said, hey, it's all over Twitter, it's on the New York Post, and I had spoken with this reporter, Dana Kennedy. I gotta tell you this, Dana Kennedy is probably one of there are very few reporters very few reporters I like. I like her. And she was 100% fair with me. And I have to say that I appreciate her work. She actually hunted
me
down.
It seemed like she did her due diligence on it as well.
It, very much. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very much. And, well, I mean, you know, this, I don't know when this was. She hunted me down. I think it was early last week or, I don't know. She hunted me down and called my daughter, Eric's wife, and then that maybe twice, and then called me, or Eric gave me her phone number. And anyway, it was kind of a, because I didn't want to, I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to deal with this, but I'm glad I did with her because she's a good person. There was a piece in the article that I just want to toss out there in the New York Post, and it's this. Let's see here. Let me see if I can put my ears back, connect them back. Okay. By the way, it features my... Oh, you know what? Mr. President, love you, but... Okay. Check this out. In fact, I had a conversation with her after this was published, and she said this was pretty damn weird. I'm kind of paraphrasing. Well, the least you can do is put my mug up there that appeared in the Post, Eric the Tech, for crying out loud. I got top billing over Clay Higgins. Come on now. Yeah. Come on, man. There you go. All right, you can take it down now. It's enough. This one, this is what I had a conversation with her about. Imagine going to a small town just outside the Rust Belt of Western Pennsylvania, and you go to a rather drab two-story apartment building, and inside that, on the second floor of that apartment building, which, by the way, has a buzzer in order to get in. You have to buzz to be let in. Imagine just getting to the buzzer and pressing that buzzer, and out of nowhere, this happens. And I'm going to quote from the article in the Post. Sister Katie, who works at a janitor at a nearby school, lives in a drab apartment building about a mile away. Two older men came to the door of the building when the Post arrived, meaning that particular reporter as well as a photographer. So two older men came to the door when the Post arrived, saying she did not want to be disturbed, and warning a reporter, "The story is dead. Remember that." Okay. Now look.
It just further corroborates your report as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, without getting into too much detail, there was a little dust up there, and two guys showed up and escorted somebody off the property. But and tried and as well as was hassled by the police and local police and state police and it was horrible. It was absolutely horrible.
What is your best estimation of who these people are that are basically preventing the investigation into this?
Well, look, I believe the FBI was involved in the cover-up of the investigation, the cover-up aspect. I believe the Secret Service had a lot to do with setup in Butler. You have to ask yourself, why Butler? Why that day? Out of all the other rallies, why that day? You have to look at Butler. Now, I know you. Okay, so when you look at the area, it's really the Dealey Plaza of. It's really kind of like a Dealey Plaza setup. I guess I'm over answering your question, but the bottom line, in order for all that to happen, it would have to be with the Secret Service from within the Secret Service, as well as assistance from outside. Okay, and by outside, I mean people that are from that area, that know that area, and also they don't take kindly to strangers, and they don't take kindly to people asking questions. But I'm not even sure what. Now I forgot your question, but it's really. I mean, Josh, I got to tell you, man. Well, you went through some of the electronic stuff, but the field investigation was really. An odyssey to be sure. So,
yeah, and I just find it odd that they're being so protective of these witnesses, even to this day. And does the federal government still have resources on these people, or are they private contractors? Is it private security? Who's paying for the private security if it is private? Or is it Pennsylvania state resources that are involved with this? It's another question.
Yeah. Look, I don't know if they're good Samaritans, bad people, good Samaritans. I don't know. I don't know if they're affiliated. I don't know. But and that was a weird thing. You know, this is what, February, end of February, beginning of March almost. So go back to August. And have the same thing happen in August, except a little bit more robust. You're talking about a lot of time there, so
yeah,
that's a great question. I don't know, and you know they're not going to identify themselves. They're not official. I'll just say that. Okay, so and they're not family. That's for sure.
So you don't think they're there in a public you don't think they're there sorry. Okay, I think
that's
all
right, man. I do it all the time.
Yeah. No, I just you don't think they're there they would willingly disclose that they are or who they're with if they were questioned?
Say that. Okay.
If you were to go back and continue your investigation and ask them, are they with any particular agency or a private security firm, do you think they would identify themselves?
Oh, hell no. No, 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 no. Let me tell you something. They wouldn't let me back.
Yeah, they're waiting for you.
Yeah. Okay. So that's okay. In a way, that's kind of how we approach this. All right, I was the throwaway because I'm old, you know. I'm not that good anymore, right, Eric the Tech? I figured I would draw the attention away from the real investigators. I'd be the distraction, so I put myself out there as the bait and. People like Eric the Tech and Shatter Ops and Save Them. They went in and did the investigation myself. And Randy Taylor did some too. But myself, I drew the attention away from the real investigators. So that helped. So
a bunch of rednecks with a sharp dressed man.
Yeah, I know they looked a little bit more professional. These investigators that are on the team there, they're serious guys, let me tell you.
Yeah, the ones
no, I'm
that we
saying
saw.
Us. Oh. Doug was a sharp dressed man. And we were all looking the part.
Yeah,
fitting in.
And I remember when we went down in a couple of vehicles as a team, I was wearing it was a hot, warm, beautiful day, sunny day. I was wearing the brightest shirt I could, you know. I actually, it was like neon when the sun hit it, and everyone else is dressed, you know, pretty much for the area. So, I went out and I sat down, and man, people came up to me and were talking to me about things. It was, didn't know who I was, but they were talking to me about, I just looked out of place. So I dragged the attention away from, even to the extent where I'm sitting, you know, 100 yards away from the actual target, and I'm not going to describe the target, but, Eric's on the roof of the building. And there are a hell of a lot of people around, and nobody saw him. I think it was you, right? It was you, Eric the Tech, wasn't it? You were on that roof.
No, that was one of our Shatter Ops friends.
Okay. Wow. So, again, the reason I brought all of this up, or actually the reason I think this is important, is because, you know, we have right now an FBI that I think Pam Bondi has really expressed. I think she screwed the pooch. I think Bondi did, and I think others did. Before we get rolling, Ms., what we'll do, let's play the summation of what happened today, because I think this is the best summary of what happened today. And we can apply this to Butler. We can apply this to Florida. We can apply this to just about everything that involves the FBI or intelligence. But what happened today, I think, was one of the worst days in the administration so far.
Absolutely.
And by the way, they're entitled to have one. You know, they are. But here's Raheem Kassam. It's about 4 minutes, but it's well worth it in this long format. And folks, pay attention to this, because this is, I think, extremely important. This is cut one, and the Epstein files were a letdown, but it's bigger than that. It goes into Pam Bondi, Cash Patel, their relationship, and what Bondi did afterwards. Here it is.
You and I obviously know a lot of the influencers who were at the White House today. I'm sure right now people have seen the pictures, people holding up the binders. But it turns out that a lot of the information within those binders is nothing new. It's not really what the American people were hoping for. I'll let you sort of walk the audience through what happened today. And more importantly, where we kind of go from here, both your thoughts and where you think the White House will go from here.
Yeah, thanks, Natalie. Well, I hope the audience knows me well enough by now to realize that when I say it's not been a very good day at the White House, that actually means something that isn't like hearing it on MSNBC, CNN, or otherwise. It was described to me, this event that occurred this morning and into this afternoon, by one of the people present in the room as, I'll use the PG term, a cluster fudge. And I think that is probably the most accurate way of putting it. Most of the people in that room are very well known to me, and so I had the ability to pull together different bits of information as well as speak to White House sources and beyond about what happened today. And mostly the fingers of blame are being pointed at AG Pam Bondi and basically saying, look, this wasn't a planned rollout. This isn't something that we expected at this meeting. This was something that she almost kind of, her and her team unilaterally did without prior knowledge of the wider White House and the operation there, especially because they've got another big event there today, the arrival of Sir Keir Starmer and the UK-US conversations that were taking place today. But, you know, I've got this piece up at the National Pulse, walking people through it. And effectively, it goes like this. These social media influencers were invited to a series of policy briefings with high-level White House and administration people, such as the Vice President, J.D. Vance, such as FBI Director Kash Patel, such as AG Pam Bondi. And they even spent some time with President Donald Trump himself today, got a tour of the Oval Office, again, had some policy briefings. But then what happened is they were given these binders, and they weren't expecting it. They weren't pre-briefed on it. And I know that prior to this event as well, because I actually spoke to some of these people about what happened today. Yesterday, they told me they were going in for these policy briefings. So they didn't expect any of this. And they were given these things. And then they were kind of paraded in front of the national media, who were there really to cover the UK-US conversation that was taking place on the White House lawn. But it turned out that the president himself was in a room, the Roosevelt room, with these binders that actually contain his name as part of the Epstein files as well. And that is, of course, an extremely embarrassing development. Now, it's nothing new. We know that President Trump was in Jeffrey Epstein's phone book. That information was released 5 years ago. There's nothing new, particularly in these binders whatsoever. I've spoken to people who have had them, who have gone through them. I've seen people live streaming from them today, this afternoon as well. And nobody can find anything new in this information. So what it turns out to be is kind of a PR stunt by the Attorney General, by Pam Bondi, to try and kind of adhere to this promise that she's now made for a couple of weeks now, that she's going to get these documents released and she's going to release the Epstein files. And so it says phase one on the front of this binder. But it turns out that phase one is information that was already publicly available anyway. So now people are scratching their heads, right? What is going on here? Why isn't she releasing the information? She went on Jesse Waters yesterday and she said, I've got the client list on my desk. And then this afternoon, of course, she comes out and sends a letter to Kash Patel saying, well, actually, we haven't been given the information by the FBI. So which is it? Because right now we've got Schrodinger's Epstein list. It does, and it both doesn't exist at the same time, and people are starting to get curious about what's going on there. I will say, in the defense of these influencers, you know, they go in there for a series of policy briefings. Of course, you know, I was about to say, of course, you get invited to go to the White House, you go to the White House. I actually got invited to go to the White House today, and I couldn't make it. That was for the UK-US event, not for this event this morning. But they were only told after they were pictured with these binders by the national and international media that, hey, these things are like off the record. We don't want the public knowing that we've handed this to you yet because we're preparing a release on it for later this afternoon or early tomorrow morning, whatever it is. And so it just turns out that, you know, a lot of people on the internet I saw this afternoon suggesting there's this wide conspiracy by all of these influencers. Maybe they're pedophile sympathizers and all of this. It turns out it's just good old-fashioned cluster fudgery.
And there you have it. That's the best, Miz, that's the best summary that I found through numerous video clips. Any thoughts on this? What happened with this?
I mean, it definitely raises a lot of questions. Could it be sabotage? Could Pam Bondi have been sabotaged? Very possible in that regard. That she didn't actually know. I don't know if she even knew what the contents of that binder completely included. I could see her having some staff put together all of the information that they had, and I believe it was just probably a very last second, hey, here are some binders that we've put together for you guys. Obviously, with the having no briefing and having no forewarning that any of this was going to happen, I think it was probably something that they did very last minute. And they, they screwed it up. There's no doubt about that. They screwed up today. The other question is, did something change from last night when Pam Bondi was on Jesse Waters to this morning when those binders were handed out? Did something, you know, she's saying that she has those records on her desk, right, that she was reviewing them. Well, those records have been public, have been on government websites and in the public sphere for 2 years, I believe. So those were, it was absolutely nothing new there. I think a lot of these files were released during the Maxwell trial.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah, so I don't know if she wasn't aware that the public had already had these disclosed to them a couple of years ago, and she was just, or if she's just trying to refresh everybody on up to current status on it. I don't know. It does, because I'm having trouble figuring out what would have led to the situation that happened today.
Yeah, thank you for that, because it looks bad.
It does look bad, and unless there's some, you know, I've seen some people speculating that they're trying to draw out the rats in the SDNY. I've seen some people saying, you know, that this is potentially going to be used as. SDNY purged the documents that we were looking for, so we're not going to be able to release them now. I've seen just a whole bunch of theories floating around out there. So that's not something that you want sitting out in the public with people speculating, especially when, one, it was promised to everybody. Is it something that we've been asking for since day one? Now, is it something that's essential to the success of the administration? Not really. You know, we have much bigger problems out there in the world, but just the
balance, that's right. Yeah,
but just as far as the corruption aspect goes, and the wanting to know who all the pedophiles are, and exposing that entire network. You know, we see that that's a very big deal as well. So,
yeah. But here's okay. So, it's my understanding you got this the head of the FBI in the Southern District of New York, the head of the field officer, John, and I don't remember what his last name is, saying basically, Pam, you got everything. You know, have a great day. Now, this is Kash Patel's underlings. Okay, so. She finds out, wait a second, he's sitting on a whole crap ton of not just paperwork, but videos, audios, pictures, perhaps, thumb drives, electronics. And she finds that out. Now, and she says, okay, well, then you've got until 8 a.m. tomorrow, meaning tomorrow, the 28th, in order or to get him to my office. Well, that was told to her by a whistleblower that there was a whole bunch of documents and material. So if I would have been Pam Bondi, based on that information, I would have sent the marshals to the Southern District of New York. I would have lined up the people away from their desks. I would have gone through, I would have questioned everybody, but away from, make sure, okay, you're not holding anything. I mean, not even a cell phone, and you're not even near anything electronic. I would have definitely made it, I would have gotten that information or that material immediately, and then whoever had that material didn't turn it over, I would have charged right then, arrested right then, and made a statement. If I was her, I mean, that's what I would do if I was in that position, if I could. And I would have told Kash Patel, look, Kash, you know, I love you, buddy, but either you're going to do this or I'm going to do it. And I guess I'll do it because, you know, I'll take one for the team. That way you're not, you know, directly involved in this, but that's what should have been done. Not wait until 8 o'clock tomorrow morning to get information that may or may not, like you said, have been already destroyed. And one last thing, and then I'm going to turn it back to you. My wife and I were talking, you know, she said, man, they destroy a lot of this stuff because who'd keep this? Long been destroyed, right? You'd think. Well, a lot of people, believe it or not, I've seen some weird things, and people keep weird things for weird reasons, usually to say, hey, Jack, look at this. Hey, check this out. Come here. Check this. Look what I've got. And can you believe this? You know, and so, I mean, there's some things I think that could very well be. It's still available, but I think a lot of it has been destroyed. And I would point to Comey. I would point to Ray. I would point to those very people for doing that. So, I mean, what are your additional thoughts on this, Josh?
Well, so I believe the head of the FBI office at the SDNY is James Dunahy.
That's right, John or James, or it begins with a J. Yeah,
James Dunahy, and I know he was appointed by Christopher Wray to that position only in September, so he has not been there that long. It makes you think that maybe he was put there to gatekeep the some of their sensitive information that they don't want to get out to the public. So, could they have had a protocol in place to circumvent AG Bondi's requests? Obviously, she is saying that the materials that she asked for was not provided to her. I just don't understand why she would go on national television and say that they were going to be released today if she knew she didn't have all of the files at that time. So that's why I keep going back to what changed between...
But wait a second. Before you go back there, you said earlier, is it possible that she is so out of touch that she figured that she had it all? You know, the 200 pages was that. From a prosecutor's point of view, I mean, which she was, you'd have to know. My goodness, you would have to know. It's more than 200 pages.
Exactly. You would absolutely know that, especially with a case of that magnitude. 200 pages is nothing. That's nothing. I mean, you know, you see some of these trials where they have truckloads of paperwork that get delivered to these offices when they're doing their discovery. So to think that only 200 pages is going to be basically the master file for that particular case is ridiculous. I think she knows that, obviously, when she said she was going to be releasing. You know, she didn't commit to releasing everything today. She did say she'd be releasing some files. So I guess it's why re-release the same files that we already have? I think that's where the big disappointment comes from.
Right.
And I don't see how she didn't know that. She had to have known that. It doesn't make any sense otherwise. So I think she's probably also getting a taste of the insubordination and the resistance from within that she didn't necessarily have to experience as a state AG. Now on the national level, you know, she's going up against three-letter agencies, and she's going up against the deep state, and she's going to be getting a lot of pushback, a lot of people ignoring requests. And I think that's something that she is going to have to actively deal with and deal with it immediately. And we did see her take a, you know, proactive step today with the letter that she sent to Kash Patel. But I'm just disappointed that she would allowed the situation to develop today the way it did. And even after... Yes. The other thing is, even after it happened, and all, you know, we had the photo op with the influencers, and then we, you know, then we're waiting to see what's in the files there, and then we learn that it's just the same thing that's already been released. Why would she have not got out ahead of that and say, "Hey, listen, we know that this is just files that are already in the public sphere. This is, you know, why we did it this way." There was no explanation given. It was just completely mishandled from top to bottom. And unless there's some big play that we're all completely missing, you know, I don't understand why she would have done it that way, because it's it seems to be, to me, the first actual big mistake that this administration has made. And you know, we can't lay it on Donald Trump. I don't think it was necessarily his fault, but how many the resistance is probably coming from both sides with her. She's and as well as the intelligence agencies. So, you know, you just never know what the story is behind the scenes, but we know that it's definitely, definitely not what was promised. So it is disappointing, but we're just going to have to wait and see at this point, I think.
No, wait and see. I think, I don't think that she was expecting, for whatever reason, I don't think she was expecting the outcry. I think the influence, the people called influencers there were there for another reason. And I suspect that she expected some loving protection by those people. That's just my view. But Seamus Bruner, who's a guy that has written some great books, and he was a government, he's the Government Accountability Institute's Director of Research. He came out and said that the FBI reportedly seized vaults of tapes. Now think of that, vaults of tapes from Epstein during their first investigation. This goes back to 05 when he was down in West Palm. None of us want to see what's on those tapes, but what happened to those tapes is the question. Who has them? Is our intelligence community keeping them because they want to maintain the leverage that having powerful people on the tape doing horrible things provide? That's a great question. Here is cut two. This is Seamus Bruner. Anytime he speaks, I do listen. And folks, I'm going to tell you, this is under 2 minutes, but it's there's actually two cuts. The first one is the assessment, and the second one is, are we going to get the truth? But we'll go with cut two, video two. Again, show notes at HagmanPI.com. Only there, click on the title for the show, and then that opens up the entire paragraphs for, or the entire show note page. But here's cut two.
All right. Now that everybody felt, hey, we're getting the Epstein client list, and what they got today was like a really bad version of the phone book. Obviously, some behind-the-scenes maneuvering. The Trump administration couldn't get what it wanted from the bureaucracy. It's just going to have to dig a second time. But I think you have some good idea of what ultimately will be in these documents. Tell us what you think the FBI might be withholding that we one day will get.
Yeah, it was kind of a swing and a miss today. And I, you know, there's been so many wins lately that I guess, we're due for one underwhelming announcement. But we have not seen anything in these documents that we haven't seen before. It's certainly no so-called client list. What we need to see is the people who were so-called clients. And really, I mean, documents are going to be great. I'm looking forward to, some 2,000 pages, apparently, that Pam Bondi is going to get from the FBI. At least we hope so. We hope it hasn't been deleted. There's a whistleblower who says that documents are being deleted. We haven't confirmed that. But really what we need is arrests. There's no statute of limitations on some of these crimes like human trafficking and crimes against children. There's no statute of limitations. So what we need are arrests. Alina Haba has said that there will be arrests, or at least there should be. And so that's the next announcement I want to hear. I don't want to read any more, flight logs. Flight logs are not evidence of anything. I mean, that's people right. fly on Jeffrey Epstein's flight. It's not the best move, but some of these people didn't know what he was up to. So it's not a sign of guilt that someone flew on his plane, and it's not a sign of guilt that they were in his black book or in his contact list. And so more details about people who are in contact lists or on the flight logs, that's old news. We've been through it many, many times. I'm not the only person who's read all of these documents. We need to know evidence of guilt, and there need to be arrests.
So, Mez, you're a certified pilot, among other things, or you were. I'm not sure if you kept up, but you were, and of course, a shirt tail hanging here proves that. But it's common for people to, if you have a jet, I mean, it's common. These people run in different circles. If you have money, and if you have a jet and you need to get up to New York, and the guy with the jet's going to New York, you might say, hey, can you give me a ride? kind of like you and I would in a car. That happens, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that's it's very common for they actually have services built around that type of experience now, where somebody that owns an aircraft can offer it for a small fee for
my backside. I called to see how much the smallest of small jets possible, from where I'm at to the border. It doesn't matter. It's like $17,000 an hour or $22,000 an hour. It's whole. Wow.
Yeah. Small fee.
Small fee.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I know it's, when you're talking people of the multimillionaire and billionaire status, that's, to them, that's just,
I guess that's nothing.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the way that, from being around it, pretty often, I can tell you with certainty, that's pretty much the way it goes. And then you think of, then also with his contact list as well, just think of, me in particular, how many contacts I have in my phone that, there are people that I haven't talked to in 15, 20 years. So
that's true.
That he has had their phone number is absolutely meaningless. So unless we get some hard evidence here, we're just going to keep on speculating and keep on, and we're just going to continue to get aggravated over this entire thing. Oh, and it just seems to be a never ending battle to try to get this information out to the public. So there's obviously some very, very powerful forces behind it. If the will of the people is being ignored to this extent.
Okay. Then let me ask you this. Okay. I don't know this P. Diddy thing. I really, related same thing. There's some powerful people, and if evidence against them exists, they can use that as leverage, as blackmail, and that's why it would still exist. So what about P. Diddy? What the hell is going on there, and why haven't we heard squat from that? What about these other people, the Red Shoe Club, the old Pizzagate? Why haven't we heard any more about all of this?
Well, the past 4 years, the previous administration had 4 years to reshape the narrative on all of these things, and now that we're trying to reopen it, I see that there's a lot of stonewalling going on, and it is going to be very difficult. And I did really appreciate that Cash put out saying, if there's documents missing, we will find them. And if there's gaps in information, we will find that as well. So, with the forensic analysis teams that they have and the resources that he has, hopefully those departments and his personnel are going to cooperate. And it's just going to be one of those things is we're going to have to really go through these agencies and find out who the people are that are actually loyal to the United States and the Constitution.
Amen.
Because otherwise they're pledging allegiance to the deep state, the bureaucracy, the globalists, and the people that really run the global syndicate there of power and corruption. So that's where we're up against it. We're fighting. It is a global syndicate of power that you're fighting. And even with the resources of that President Trump has and the people that he has in place, it is a very, very large conglomerate of enemies that he is trying to pursue right now. So
are we gonna win?
Yeah, that's you know, I think having Cash and Dan Bongino there, that you know, they're going to win or they're going to die trying. And I wish I could be a fly on the wall with those guys and try to help out where I could with that. But
do you know when Bongino is going to be placed and become active?
I think he has 2 more weeks on air for his show. I believe he said March 14th, I believe, is his last show. So I would assume pretty quickly after that. I know he had to do a lot of preparation for the move and to get his business affairs in order and things like that. So,
I'd rather see him in the managerial capacity there, day-to-day operations as deputy director. As opposed to a Secret Service post, because a lot of people can do that. Not too many people can do the other. So anyway, I'm glad he's there. Now I want to kind of go off. I know the chat was talking about this earlier. And if you're in chat, God bless you. Thank you for being there. And if I had 22 grand an hour and take a bunch and we'd fly somewhere warm and have some fun and a big jet. But anyway, Gene Hackman and his wife, Gene Hackman, 95. I didn't realize he was that old, but 95. And 63-year-old wife and one of their 3 dogs found dead inside their house. Now, I've got to tell you, based on just what I heard, they had to be dead for a while. Okay, now a while. I'm sure there was, and forgive any kind of graphic stuff here, but decomp probably had set in because I heard a statement saying, well, we're not sure if they were shot. It doesn't look like they were shot. Okay, so to make a statement like that, chances are you're not looking at a pristine corpse. And I could tell you it gets difficult after a few days. Okay, so, and that's based on experience. Any thoughts on, I mean, that seems awful. Seems awful, period, but seems awful weird. And there's a pill bottle spilled around. I mean, it was on social media all day. I mean, what do you think?
Well, you know, I spent the majority of the day when I wasn't involved with some of the other things I have to do throughout the day. I was really trying to research any of the information and try to get freshened up on the Epstein files and try to figure out what the hell was going on there. So I didn't really look into it too much because I think when it first came out, they said it was, no foul play was suspected at first. And then they kind of changed their tune about halfway through the day. So, I don't know much about it. I really can't give an opinion on what I think happened, but just from what everybody is saying in the chat and the speculation that's going on online, it looks like there's going to be a lot more to that story as well.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't have any. You don't have any. I don't have any reason to believe that this was connected to Epstein, do you? I mean, at 90, look, the guy at 95, I mean, no. I mean, yeah, even if you go back 20 years,
I just don't see that.
Yeah.
I mean, could he have been involved with Epstein? Sure, he could have been, but does this necessarily correlate to that?
Yeah.
I would have trouble believing that.
Yeah.
For certain, and, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this could have been anything from a murder, because the gas company was out there. The recent report was gas company was out there, checked the lines and all, whatever they do, and everything's fine. So it had to be some external force. I mean, look, I'll just leave it at that. And we're just going to have to let the investigation proceed until we find out what happened. It could have been murder, suicide. It could have been a double homicide.
Do we know, has Gene said anything or has he made any public comment?
He's been like not a hermit, but he's been really by himself for quiet for a number of years. So,
and where was he when this was all going down as well?
You're talking about Gene Hackman, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was when he was found dead, or where
when his wife again? Was found dead. When his wife was found dead, yes.
Well, his wife and him were fine. They were in separate rooms. Apparently, she was in the closet, or half in, half out of the closet in the bathroom, against a heater that may or may not have been moved, whether it be by a fall, we'll say, or by who knows. And he was in a different room. There was a dead dog with her. Deceased dog. I don't know how that dog passed away. And another dog that was alive that was near her, and then two other dogs outside. That much I know is fact. What the hell? And there were pills, a pill bottle and pills spilled on the floor around her, not him. So bottom line, who the hell knows? I mean, I don't know. It's a mystery. Certainly a mystery. But
yeah,
hey, they could have been Lipitor pills, for crying out loud. You know, I mean, who knows what kind of pills they were? But
yeah, okay. I'm just trying to get the see if there's any updates here, and I'm not seeing anything.
Yeah, to me, the big story about this is, man, the media comes right out and says, no, there's nothing suspicious here, nothing to see here.
You're right. No foul play. Yeah. No foul play suspected. That's, you know, the leading headline. Yeah.
You got two dead people, a dead dog, and a scene like that. I don't think I'd be saying, you know, no foul play suspected. I'd be saying, you better get a homicide detective over here, rope off the scene, and let's do an investigation and get the people out of the flipping house, get the other cops, you know, quit contaminating the scene. But anyway, that's my theory on that. Okay, or my thoughts on that. All right, that's. I wanted to get your take on that. A lot of people want to just ask you, what have you been researching that, you know, you're the AI guy, and I'm very concerned about this AI stuff. As a couple of people I spoke to today were very concerned about it. Patriot Doc in the Midwest. Mike Adams has been talking about this, getting ahead of it like you have. We exchanged some posts or some texts. I don't have my device with me. About who's that guy? Schmidt? No. What's that guy's name?
From where?
The one of the three at the White House. No, polluted your mind. But anyway, if that's not on your mind, I mean, what has been on your mind? Because you've been looking, you've been doing so much research. Folks, this guy, if he's not sleeping or otherwise engaged in some work that needs to be done, he's doing research. What's the big things that are on your mind that you want to just share with us?
Well, I mean, if it comes to, if we're talking about AI, you know, since last time we've talked, there isn't really a whole lot of new information on that. Sam Altman, is that who you were speaking about?
Yeah,
thinking of Sam Altman for, okay. Sam Altman. All right. I don't know if you're referring to the other gentleman from Oracle, but you know, he's still, you know, he's at the helm of OpenAI right now, and he is trying to shift it to a for-profit model. And I know that's the big concern with everyone. It's really where the dissemination of information can get controlled.
Did you see the Glenn Beck episode? Glenn Beck did a piece on this where it's my understanding that AI can double its knowledge base in a matter of like 12 hours and five. I mean, it's incredible at the rate this is going. Did you see that or anything like that? Or do you know anything about this?
Yeah, so Microsoft recently released a statement that they have created a new type of microchip, it'd be used in quantum computing. Something that would take a supercomputer millions of years, this thing can solve within seconds or minutes. And it actually,
I don't even know if
it's hard to wrap your mind around.
What does that even mean? I mean, what can it solve?
Well, they're actually saying that they've created a new state of matter called a topoconductor. And it basically means that the particles, the way that it's the way that the particles move and then they have their own antiparticles, and it's very complex to understand unless you have some literature in front of you so you can kind of read it back. But
Let me kind of stop you right there.
Yeah.
Matter takes on three forms: liquid, solid, gas. Right. There's a fourth. There's another type of matter, or another form that matter takes on within that chip. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah. It's kind of a state. They call them quasi particles, where they're both a particle and an antiparticle at the same time. Basically, what they're trying to say is they'll be able to design your personalized medication that's it's designed specifically for your body, your DNA. It'd be used for encryption. It could be used for so many different things, simulations. A lot of people think that it'll have a big effect on space travel. So it's something that I know DARPA has also been working on for a very long time. So the fact that Microsoft is claiming that they were able to create this chip basically is saying any supercomputer right now would basically be obsolete if this chip actually is developed and is made for commercial use. It would be extremely powerful, and it could very, very quickly cause chaos. If it was chaos. Used improperly, think of being able to do mathematical equations that were used to create the nuclear bomb, and now you're able to create something infinitely more powerful than that.
Well, those are some happy thoughts.
With all of the mathematics and the science research that went into developing that, something like this could do calculations that would seem not feasible to us right now. It's very, I think it's still more of a concept than anything, but the fact that they're saying they have this chip, it's something to really pay attention to going forward. And next time I come on, I can bring a lot more information about it and kind of try to explain exactly what the qubits are and exactly what the quasi-particles mean and everything like that. But it is extremely concerning that technology is moving as fast as it is. It's getting exponentially more powerful.
I don't think we're going to recognize our environment, our world, really, in a year from now, or two or three, or at the most five, given all of this. Unless, and this is when you were on before, you had said this is why President Trump is pushing forward on moving, you know, insistent on moving forward on AI. And, you know, a lot of people look at it as a detriment, but maybe he's trying to get control over the, as opposed to trying to gain control over it, is kind of the way I understood it. Hold that thought. We're just past the top of the hour break. You're listening to the Hagmann Report on this Thursday, February 27, 2025. Tomorrow, last day of February, Friday. Boy, can't wait for Friday. Definitely. Folks, I want to direct you again to staywarmnow.com. Staywarmnow.com. Folks, I love this device. You know, we had a really warm summer last year, and we saw a spike in power bills. Now, households are seeing the same problem with heating bills now, okay, because of the, man, it's cold outside. So, families are bringing attention to exceptionally high heating bills they've received earlier this month. And the fact that they're almost double the previous month, the rise in utility costs are even forcing some to have to decide, hey, do I pay for food or do I pay my heating bill or get medicine? That's even better. Why not? Right? Well, if you can mitigate that, and this is something that, look, I don't want to say I'm cheap, but I watch every dollar that I spend. Why? Because it's important to me. All right. Especially being, if you're a listener supported, you don't want to be tossing money away, right? So I want to make sure I'm getting the best bang for my buck. And that's why I got this device. And actually, I have two now. And both the devices, I use one in my office and one in my studio. And then I take the studio one up out to my house and use it there. It's fantastic. So I'd recommend you getting more than one. Go to staywarmnow.com, staywarmnow.com. This, I just love how this thing really switches. You can switch it from, you know, a slow warmth. Hey, you know, make me a little warm to, you know, set my hair on fire. Again, I'm joking, but you get the idea. There's different levels of heat, and it saves you just a ton of money, and it heats up in no time, and it heats up the area really quickly. And that surprised me how quickly it worked. It's compact enough where I could take it with me wherever I go, and powerful enough, again, to heat just about any room you can think of. Folks, go to staywarmnow.com. That's staywarmnow.com. Do yourself, to your wallet a favor. Grab one of these for up to 60% off this winter season only. You've got to get it. 60% off staywarmnow.com. Plus, you order today, you get expedited shipping, 60 days to return it if you're not satisfied, and several other free bonuses. You'll be surprised. Order staywarmnow.com. Do it today. Staywarmnow.com. Do it today. All right. Josh Mez is with me. We're talking about just a whole myriad of things. I saw this. I'm not gonna test you, but you're up on just about everything. Folks, the way, if I have a question, I can call him and get an answer right away. I don't need any of this, what is that, Grok or ChatGPT. I can ask a question to Josh and I get a human answer. And that's what I like about him. So let me switch topics briefly, and then we'll get back to other stuff. But Fort Knox Gold. Now, you think it's there, and what do you think about that whole thing, Fort Knox Gold? What's your?
Once you start really researching the entire history of that,
Yeah.
And where a lot of this gold has been, or where they think it's been allocated to, basically that there's speculation out there that the United States has been stealing gold. There's other speculation out there that they have been like the banks, the global banking system has been stealing gold from the United States. So essentially the United States is stealing it from, or they're saying, hey, we're going to store all of this gold for you securely to all of our European allies, Germany, Italy, say, you know, we're going to store all of your gold. And then when these countries ask for some of their gold back, the United States comes back to them and says, we can't give you all that. We can't give you that much gold back. Or they just don't respond to the request. So obviously that is another something. It's not like there's a lot more to it than Elon and Trump just saying, hey, let's go down to Fort Knox and live stream it and see if the gold is there. There's a much more substantial background to that. And this has been something of speculation for a long time. And I think they're trying to, you know, I think it's a very high level investigation on trying to find out exactly where is all of the gold. And if we do not have it, who does? Where did it go if it's not at Fort Knox? Because, you know, Fort Knox has historically been very private about the gold that is in the facility. So it'd be very interesting. I would love to see what's going on with that. And, you know, that's something, if you go back and look to some of the world banks and where they're keeping their a lot of their gold, there's a lot of speculation that that's where the gold has gone, is to these world banks, and that the and that they've kind of been propping up the numbers for our government here for quite some time. And that's one of the strangleholds of power that they have over us at the moment. So I think that's another, you know, that's another avenue that Donald Trump is trying to pursue, and trying to return our currency to a gold standard. I think that's a brilliant idea as well. I know you've talked about that. You've talked about that for a very long time.
Let me toss this idea at you. People have heard of Schrodinger's cat, right? You know, it's dead and alive. Well, how about Schrodinger's gold? How about the gold's there, but we don't have it? And what, huh? Let me toss this up. Jim Rickards, you know who he is, the economist. Like him or don't like him, he has a great point. And this is Jim Rickards talking today about Fort Knox. Yeah, the gold's there, but maybe we don't have it. What does he mean by that? Here's 2 minutes. And if you think about this, by the way, Glenn Beck kind of touched on this. This is the second time or third time I mentioned Glenn Beck, I think, this program. But rehypothecation, I'm going to tell you something. I can touch on that afterwards, but check this out. 2 minutes, this is cut five. This is about Fort Knox gold. Here it is.
Question I have for the president, Elon Musk, go to Fort Knox, okay, the gold's there, that's fine. Ask the Treasury, and they probably don't want to ask this, is that gold leased? Is that gold leased to J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Citi, and others?
Hold it. Full stop. If it's in Fort Knox, it's supposed to be the gold of the United States of America and the United States Treasury. Is it? That's why U.S. troops, it's in actually an army base. And, of course, the base is a little separate from the gold depository.
Right.
But I would assume, and I think people watching this show would assume, that is the gold of the United States of America, is it not, sir? What do you mean, leased?
Well, it is. But if I lease my house to you, you can move in. It's perfectly legal, but I still own the house. Now, people don't understand gold leasing. They hear the gold is leased. They assume that, like, J.P. Morgan backs up a truck and takes the gold. No, that's not what happened. The gold is there. The Treasury owns it. I just want to be clear about that. The gold is there, and the Treasury owns it. But they can lease it out. That's a paper transaction. And here's the key. When you're the lessee, you're, again, J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, any of the big banks, you have a right of rehypothecation. That means you can lease it to somebody else, or you can sell it to somebody else on what's called an unallocated basis, which is say, yes, yeah, Steve, you own the gold, but not really. There are no bars with serial numbers with your name on it, but it's a paper gold transaction. But that's my point. It's a long chain of paper transactions. Everybody thinks, every lessee, every buyer of unallocated gold thinks they own gold, and they do have price exposure, but they don't have the gold. The gold's in the vault where it belongs. But you can actually make money leasing. How could you blame the Treasury for, you know, picking up a percentage point or two on the gold by leasing it out? But the bigger point, the one you refer to, is that the chain of paper gold is 100 times the physical gold. You couldn't possibly settle all those transactions. Now, I understand gold leasing. I just described it. I don't know for a fact that the Treasury gold is leased. I suspect it is. I don't know that. To me, it's a question. But it's a question that the Treasury may not want to answer.
You wouldn't want to know the answer to that question, because if it is leased, then everything is nothing more than a Ponzi scheme, and our entire, not just the U.S., but the global economy will crash. And I'll tell you what, Elon Musk will suddenly become a pauper, okay? Somebody that does not have any money, or doesn't have any wealth. I shouldn't say money, but wealth at all. And it will become another, failed country. And I think that's the answer. But so we could have gold there, but it could be leased out to five different times and unravel that. And you take down the entire banking system. And I think that people need to pay attention to this. Any thoughts on that? I mean, you know, we'd love to get back to a gold-backed system, but who's got the gold?
And that is one question. And the other point that I don't think he raised was, we historically have been the gatekeepers for our allies for their gold. And there's a lot of speculation out there that we have actually leased out the gold, our allies' gold, to the banks as well. So it's not even our gold, all of our gold that we're leasing out. It could also be gold of our allies as well. That's kind of like a big possibility.
And I had to kind of really strive to understand this. But to me, it's kind of like, okay, you rent a house from a landlord, and then you sublease it, or you lease it to, you say, okay, you know, I'm going to lease it to whoever, John Smith. So John Smith, he moves in and then decides, well, you know, it's too big of a house for me. So I'm going to in turn lease it to somebody else. And then pretty soon you've got a massive problem. Or it could be where you lease it to John Smith, and then you lease it again to, and John Smith takes a job out of town, and then you, because he's not there, you lease the home again to someone else. Okay, I mean, that, in my mind, that's kind of the way I can, I don't know, map this all out. But in the end, while you're collecting money, like he says, making interest, you're collecting money, but you're killing the system. You're gaming it to such an extent where it's going to collapse. So
yeah, anyway. And I kind of look at it as, if I'm going to lend my car to a friend, I tell a friend, I'm going to be, would you mind taking care of my car while I'm away? And then your friend goes out and leases that car out to somebody else to make a profit off of it. And then I go back to that friend and say, I need my car back when I get back. And he says, give me a few days I need it for a couple more days. Give me a little bit of time before I get it back to you. And then, you end up never getting it back. So that is, that's kind of the way I look at it. Either way, whatever analogy you're using, it can definitely, it's definitely a big possibility. And the other thing I wonder as well is, with the amount of debt that we're in, we might have some gold there, but do we own the gold? Not even, are we the ones, are we leasing the gold?
Is it being leased
to us as well? That's another question.
Exactly. Thank you. Yes.
Not, are we leasing it out to the banks or all of these other institutions, but are we in so much debt that we're actually leasing the gold ourselves? And what is the whole repercussions of something like that? How does that fit into our economic and financial system overall? I think that's something that is a very interesting question, and we have to see, once we get to the bottom of, do we actually have the gold to start with that first? It'll be very interesting to see what comes of that.
Man, all I know. Would exposure still, regardless, would it be a good thing? I mean, exposure at the peril to a nation or to a global economy, is that a good thing? I'm just sort of kind of asking.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, at the end of the day, we want what's best for our country overall. So if that's something that I know we want disclosure and we want to know everything that's going on, and we have a right to that. But at the same time, we don't want to damage our country in the global and our global efforts is either. We don't want to put ourselves in a position that is going to be detrimental to the country. But again, I think we do have a right to know. And I think we have to get to a society that can be transparent overall and can, the classification system isn't overused and the banks in the financial system can't hide what they're doing. We might have to take some lumps on the head for that. And we might have, it's a big undertaking. It really is a total transformation of the country that we're living in right now into a more open and honest society. So, is that possible? Is that feasible, especially with how integrated we are with the military industrial complex and the world banking system? Trying to work and obviously President Trump is extremely business friendly. He loves, he wants money. He wants us to live well. So, obviously there's always going to be some level of corruption when it comes to people competing for wealth. How do you balance the two things? How do you get to an open, honest society? How do you get to the world peace while also letting businesses compete and trying to accumulate wealth? How do you balance that? That's what I have a hard time, trying to wrap my head around with President Trump is, he wants all the businesses coming here. He wants to sell citizenship with that $5 million gold card citizenship.
Which
is another red flag.
Yeah. Okay. But the program that is replacing was nothing more than that was kind of a hoax, not a hoax, but it was BS. So is this BS being replaced with BS? Like this, explain to me this gold card, because what the hell is that? You got $5 million. You can buy citizenship in this country. Is that what?
That's exactly what it is. Yeah. For $5 million, you can buy your citizenship into the United States. And what we have to be careful of with that is if that is a possibility, we have all these foreign national companies that are these other global conglomerates that can use that to their advantage, and really start, you know, you think your politics are being influenced now. Wait till you have these global billionaires coming in and trying to influence elections at that point. You know, you have Saudi Arabians that, you know, they have all the oil money in the world. Well, what happens if some of their most prominent figures decide they want to be citizens of the United States, and then they can participate in our electoral process and really start, you know, we, instead of having one George Soros to compete with, now we have 40, or we have 100. You know, I think that it's opening up a can of worms that we have to be, again, have to be very careful about. So,
very, very good. Yeah.
It's just something that, you know, I don't, I'm always one that, you know, he announces something like that. And, you know, I think a lot of the ideas that he have are genuinely, you know, they're coming from the right spot, but I immediately jump to where can that be used against us? And I just see so many possibilities with something like that, where you're just going to start selling citizenship to the highest bidder. You know, what are the repercussions of that? Cause you're essentially, selling the soul of your nation to the highest bidder at that point. So
that's, man, that's everything about that to me is wrong. Even with, I mean, a $5 million price, yeah, come on.
Right. And, you know, and there's going to amount to trillions of dollars off of our debt. And I think that's the big thing, you know, that's this big push that he is making. We have to shrink the workforce and government, and we have to cut so much spending, and we have to bring in as much business as we can. It's like, okay, well, that's a good idea, but at what cost to the America that we're trying to save? You know, we're trying to save the values of America as it is, conservative Christian values. And even, you know, even if you're not religious, but it's still, no matter what, the country is based off of Christian values. So there seems to be a big conflict of interest with something like that. How is that going to transform our country? I don't know. There's so much going on right now that it's scary to think about, really.
And folks, to me, this is, you know, we could talk about these various issues. Obviously, it's important for us to get to the bottom of all the lists, you know, the client, Epstein client list, in the files, the JFK, and all of these are important. I think we need to get to the bottom of all this. But what we're talking about is the heart and soul of our country. And I think Josh has made a good point here. A couple of good points with respect to the heart and soul of our country. And we also, I'm going to toss this in there in the middle of what you were saying. We also have to get back to a Christian, God fearing and God worshiping country, as opposed to where we're at now. I mean, I think the first four, or the initial four states of our union, are the least spiritual and religious. I mean, from Maine to Vermont to, it's all up in the Northeast. Out of like 10, the 10 least spiritual states. Anyway, I digress a little bit, but I'm telling you, it's about, so all of this you're talking about is for the survival, is for the thriving of our nation, the heart and soul of our nation, right? I mean, that's what you're saying, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. When you look at that, somebody's trying to buy citizenship into the country, it's, you're basically defeating, you know, why even at that point, why guard the borders?
Well,
it's essentially, you know, it's a different way of doing the same thing.
But then people will say, well, you know, I mean, how many people can afford that $5 million? Well, the bottom line, by the way, Maxwell's making a cameo.
You don't think people will be able to take out a loan in order to do that? You know, you don't think they can, mortgage their gold card? You know, definitely a possibility there.
Well,
I see.
A little private moment. Sorry about that. Hey, where's Rocco? It's really, it's not right in its entirety. Not at all. Folks, I don't know whether you saw this. The most important election, by the way, I'm kind of switching gears here. People aren't paying attention to this. If you can believe this, the most important election coming up on April 1st, April Fool's Day. This is a story out of Revolver.News, and I saw this some places where some other entities were talking about this, and you have to excuse Maxwell. He's knocking the microphone. Okay. So, yeah, isn't it? It's horrible. Maxwell. So here's the deal. One of the most important elections in America is happening on April 1st, and barely anyone is paying attention. It's crucial. Scott Pressler is talking about this. He issued a dire warning that every conservative should be talking about the Wisconsin Supreme Court election. Why? Because George Soros is trying to buy the court again. Here we go friggin' again. And you can see it on your screen. This is from Revolver.News. It's not in the show notes, but I would recommend everyone read this. And this is a big deal because Scott is stunned that nobody's talking about it. We finally have a shot at stopping Soros in his tracks. Yet conservatives seem asleep at the wheel. Are we going to ever learn? Every conservative in America should be talking about this, talking about the Wisconsin Supreme Court election on April 1st, April Fool's Day. No fooling. Soros is trying to buy the court so liberals can gerrymander Wisconsin congressional maps and then take the House in 26. This is a plan of his. Folks, I would urge you to read that because this cannot be permitted. Not even in the least. And speaking of the Supreme Court, I'm just wondering, you know, with all of these lawfare components of lawfare, the Supreme Court seems to be taking up a few, but refusing a few more with respect to the freezes on funding of payments and such. Any thoughts on how that's going to play out? Because I know you do a lot of research, and maybe your thoughts on that, if any. Our Supreme Court, whether all of the... here's my question. You're going to see a lot more lawsuits against President Trump and the people surrounding him with respect to his Doge and other things. Ultimately, some are going to reach the Supreme Court. Your thoughts on that, on whether they're going to take most, if not all, of these cases, or, and if they do, are they going to rule in his favor, or are they going to not? What's your thoughts?
Well, I don't think that the president has done anything that would be outside of his authority currently. I think everything that he's doing is within his purview of the president of the United States of America and the commander in chief. I think he has a right to do pretty much what he sees fit to do in terms of hiring, firing, setting policy, yeah, and basically, you know, he keeps referring to the mandate that he's been given. Yes, of course, that is true. And people are going to question the legality of it all, you know, as much as they can. But who knows? You know, I don't see him. I see him winning pretty much any case that they've been trying, that they're trying to bring his way right now. I don't see any of them holding up. I think most of it has been obviously activist judges with either political or financial interest in the particular thing that they're trying to shut down. There's, you know, these judges have family tied to a lot of the USAID things. It's really, I don't know. It's really something that I think the Supreme Court is, if it does get to that level, which I don't even think most of them are even going to make it that far. They're going to keep trying, of course. It doesn't matter what President Trump does. You know, like he said before, he could cure cancer and they would be against it. You know, who would have ever thought a Democrat would be against abolishing the IRS or shutting down IRS buildings? You know, because they're saying, oh, he wants to shut down the post, you know, the Postal Service, and privatize that, and he wants to, you know, abolish the IRS just because he wants to have, he wants to be able to do whatever he wants with the property that those facilities own. You know, that's one thing where they're saying, oh, he's going to take all of those properties and sell them off to all of his buddies, and they're going to, you know, they're going to make a mint off of it because they're going to buy this government property for pennies on the dollar for what the real estate is actually worth, and then they're going to develop it and yada yada yada. But
you make a good point here too, because okay, information just came out, and I don't know how many people go to Doge, their website, but for example, okay, so the in one case, Department of Veterans Affairs, their building portfolio, I don't know how many people saw this. So the government owns these buildings, for example, 810 Vermont Avenue. It's 618,000 square foot building. It's got, it can fit a staff of about 2,500 people. The monthly rent, and think about this, I'd like to be this landlord, $27.2 million is the monthly rent of this office building. That's $27.2 million a month. The average people that, now it holds 2,500, the average people that come every day, or in, I'm sorry, every month to work is 387 people. Give or take, right? Average. So it's a 16% occupancy rate. So we're paying $27.2 million a month. Now, for a building with a 16% occupancy rate. Now, here's some, a couple more. Six more, actually. One has a 10%. Another 11% occupancy rate, 120% occupancy rate, 110, 19%. The rents, one has $14 million a month rent, 1,295 office for workers, 124 average people log in per month. I could go on and on. You're looking at, you could take one of these buildings and get rid of the rest and put everybody in one building. It's that bad. So where was I going with that? Except to say, I guess you were kind of going down that track somehow, right? Save me. Save me.
Yeah. So, you know, you're right. The VA is being very underutilized. I believe they have, the VA's reported over 500 vacant or underutilized properties. I was reading something about that across 130 to 150 cities or so. And I know one of the things that President Trump will be looking at, and you know, what he is going to get a lot of pushback on, is he's going to be looking to liquidate some of these properties. Because he's going to say that we no longer need them, and it's costing us a fortune to maintain them. I think that's, you know, that's going to be in the next phase of cuts after we get the after Doge finds all the waste, fraud, and corruption there, and we get rid of we downsize the staff of the government. Well, if we have a smaller staff, if we have less employees in the government, then we obviously don't need the buildings either. So. Yeah. That is going to be the next thing that comes up here. You're going to start seeing here in the next few months. I think he's really going to start leaning into talking about, hey, we can sell these properties and we can make them big and beautiful. And yeah, I'm a builder, and he's going to play that whole card where he is a master of that with the real estate. And I think that is where he's probably going to receive some of the most pushback out of everything, is once the United States starts giving up real estate assets, he's going to really come under fire for something like that.
Now that's an interesting thing you say there. Okay. I have to admit that. Why would that be the hot button issue? And folks, you might think, oh man, you could not be more boring if you tried, but wait a second. Hold on a second, guys. Josh, why would you say that? Because,
well, what the argument is going to be is, look at President Trump. He is taking property away from the American public for property that the American people own, this prime real estate in these prime cities, some of the best real estate in the country. President Trump wants to sell it to the highest bidder. He wants to sell it to his friends so they can develop it and make money off of it. And basically saying that it's going to make his rich buddies richer, and the American people are going to lose out because we're losing valuable assets on our we're losing valuable property, which is publicly owned.
Interesting.
That's going to be their big argument against it. And when in reality, if these buildings are not being utilized, and what else are you supposed to do with them? Just let them rot, or not use it? We're trying to downsize the government. Well, that's one thing that goes along with it. So I don't see any problem with allowing people to purchase these properties when it comes to that. But I do think that he has to be transparent with it. I don't think it can be sold under our noses. I think it needs to be open, public auction type deal. If that is the case where he does come to want to sell some of these properties, because I know, like the VA has very prime property in LA and Washington, D.C. The post office owns 8,500 facilities nationwide. Let's see, I have some stuff pulled up here on this. Post office owns facilities, Times Square, Union Station. They own stuff in downtown Chicago, Los Angeles, downtown Los Angeles, or prime real estate in Los Angeles and Boston. There's going to be a lot. If he does decide to cut the post office and privatize it and send it out to somebody with UPS, FedEx, Amazon, or even facilitating it to contractors across the country, which is very possible. And just having a background in that field, if that is something that they'd like to do, it's very feasible. It's very doable. And it would probably be a better, cheaper service, in the long run as well. Because right now, I wouldn't necessarily say cheaper to us, but, for the government, it would be cheaper because they lose a fortune with the post office. I could see a lot of businesses benefiting from privatizing the USPS. I get what he's trying to do if he does go down that road. But I just know it's going to be hell, because he's going to be cutting postal workers, IRS agents, VA workers, doctors, they're all going to go somewhere. Now they're going to say, oh, no, VA, they're already saying that the VA can't get appointments as it is, because I think that's more due to lack of staffing or bureaucracy, mainly. The quality of care at the facilities is some of them is excellent and some of them is terrible. But
and you should know
that's going to be a counter. Yeah, right. Exactly. And I think that's going to be one of the counter arguments. I was at the the VA very, very, very frequently. And I could see it was extremely understaffed, but the patients there were very well taken care of as well. So you get some nurses and doctors that actually care about helping people, and it's not, you know, fortunately for them, it's not more of the let's try to bill it, you know, let's just try to increase our billing. Some of the, you know, these doctors and nurses there are really there.
Right.
Out of love for the patient, so, and the soldiers that are there, so.
Yeah, exactly, and these are folks. These are real world things that affect you and I. This is not bitching about something that hasn't come out yet, or complaining about, you know, Bondi's nightly appearances on Fox News. Although that's important. This is stuff that will impact you directly. I've got one thing. Eric the Tech, I sent this to you. Josh Mez, by the way, is joining me tonight, and I so appreciate him joining me. You said something you had briefly mentioned earlier about USAID and about, you know, all the uproar around it and such. There was a Doge subcommittee. Did I say Dodge again? If I did, I apologize. Doge subcommittee meaning Dodge is on my mind ever since I was talking to somebody about a 95 Caravan. Anyway, there was a Doge subcommittee. Burchett was asking some questions, and when I heard this or saw this, I couldn't believe it. Do you realize that USAID, from our taxpayer funds, we funded ISIS, we funded Al-Qaeda? Do you know this? Folks in the chat.
It just came out today, I believe, that we were also funding Hamas. Weeks before October 7th, we were giving them millions of dollars.
Yeah, it was like $40 million a week or something.
Which makes you think, what was the intention? If you know you're going to start a conflict in the region, what's the purpose? It's, you know, a destabilization of an area for what purpose, to what end game?
Exactly. Well, this, because I want to get this before we run out of time. This is, I mean, stunning to me. Stunning. Eric the Tech, did you get that and cue that up by chance?
Yep.
Okay. We can run a few minutes of this. Go ahead and let it play. But folks, listen to this. My gosh. And watch this. What the heck's wrong with people? And Josh, your comments on the other side. Here it is.
Mr. Roman, are you aware that we are sending $40 million a week to the Taliban?
Yes, sir.
Can you name other instances of foreign aid going to terrorist organizations?
We have assisted Al-Shabaab in Somalia. There's been instances of the Khamzi Network in Sudan, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, Hezbollah, Kataiba Hezbollah, Hayat Ahrir al-Shams in Syria. Dozens of terror organizations have received indirect assistance from U.S. foreign aid.
Could you elaborate a little bit on the mechanisms in place that are to stop foreign aid from going to terrorist groups, and why are they not working if we have any in place?
Sure.
And I would note that these are terrorist weaponry. You see some AKs, SKSs, some snipers, some clips, some clip carriers probably made in China. And I believe these are small landmines here beside right there.
Let's use Gaza as our case study. $2.1 billion in American taxpayers' money to Gaza since October 7th when Hamas invaded southern Israel. USAID money was going in terms of an emergency use authorization to try to go to parties that USAID formerly had a relationship with in the Gaza Strip. They had to have been vetted by OFAC. They should have been vetted against the special designated terror list from the State Department and from other Treasury organizations. Waivers were granted because they said that there was an emergency use to have that money come in to Gaza, thereby jettisoning the usual typical screening procedures. As a result, 90% of aid that was going from the United States by way of its agents in Gaza ended up in Hamas-controlled areas. And this is ridiculous. Essentially, what the U.S. assistance to Gaza did was underwrite the ability for Hamas to survive until the ceasefire was just passed a few weeks ago. There was no strategic thought for it, and there was no screening.
Seems like the emergency might have been armed terrorists to kill civilians. Would that be accurate?
That's accurate. And even more than that, Samantha Powers, the administrator for USAID, was intent on having Israel not be able to defend itself.
To not be able to defend it.
Correct.
Mr. Pramerak, is that correct? How do you say that? Pramerak? I got Burchett, man. Nobody gets mine right, so don't worry about it. What is it? Pramerak?
Perfect.
All right. Thanks, brother. How did terrorists explore our foreign aid loopholes?
Well, we have a lot of our international...
Can you pull your mic up? I'm sorry.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
You have international NGOs and UN agencies actively lobby here in Washington, D.C. against vetting policies that would prevent it. I was the senior vetting officer at USAID. And
Did you say United Nations is doing this? The UN?
Sure. Everybody who's getting money lobbies here.
That they're lobbying against us. I'm sorry, Mr. Roman,
Someone who used to work for one of those lobbies, the largest NGO lobby, Interaction. One of our co-witnesses here worked for them from 2018 to 2023. USAID effectively self-funds its own external private lobby that then goes back to Congress and asks for more money for USAID.
So the taxpayers fund this lobbyist who's working against American interests.
Correct.
Possibly killing our allies and possibly Americans.
They bring together groups in Washington that oversees work with groups that kill Americans.
Yeah, I don't need a flowchart to show that. I appreciate it. Do you think USAID programs have been aligned with the national security interests of the U.S.?
No, they have not. They have actually helped China.
Mr. Roman?
No.
Okay. How do these programs compromise our national security, Mr. Pramerak?
They actually push much of the world towards China on the green energy agenda. They push people, ordinary people, billions of people towards China because of the resentment caused by our social reengineering.
Are we being lobbied by these pro-communist China groups currently?
Well, a lot of these countries don't even have to lobby because they get the money anyway, like South Africa.
Yeah, and
Yeah, and folks, I would urge watching the entire, the rest of that. So Josh and folks, just at the tail end right there, okay, obviously, you know, your head's going to explode because of the money going to these terrorist organizations that have everything but our own interests, you know, at heart. But what got me, two things, benefiting China by way of the green energy scam as well as the social reengineering programs. If you dig deeper into those two items, Al Gore, Gates, and others, especially the people over in Europe pushing this green scam and the social reengineering, the tranny movement, the perversion pushed by Soros and company, as well as USAID from Soros through USAID or vice versa, depending on how this money all goes through. But by the time you try untangling all of this, it's going to be years. But to what you said, Elon Musk has got the capabilities of untangling this. Is that? Because you were trying to reassure me that he does, I think, unless I was mistaken. Mez, tell me. Again, help me out here.
Well, I think, once again, it's just pointing out the fact that all roads lead back to the Chinese Communist Party watering the seeds that they have planted in the United States.
Marvelous.
The social unrest, weaponization of our food, and this is all stuff that Trump is trying to fix. You know, we have the food that is it's messing with the testosterone in men, and it's having a big effect mentally on our population with the chemicals in our food, in our processed food, and a lot of the chemicals that are used in that food comes from China. And then we also have funding our politicians. We have them basically they're trying to capture the United States from within with what, you know, and that's they're playing a strategic game, their social engineering, and I think that's one of the main aspects of why Donald Trump is pushing so hard for the AI side of things, is because we have to be able to compete with China. With what we see with these lobbyists and USAID basically going full circle and being self-funding and then realigning with the Chinese Communist Party agenda on what USAID is funding, it's really remarkable that there's not more of an uproar in Washington. And I think that's because a lot of the lobbyists, we're seeing firsthand that, I think $1.2 billion in humanitarian aid went to Palestine, Palestinians since 2021, I believe, yes, is what they said.
Yeah.
Which obviously, by doing that, that's not humanitarian, because you know where that money is going, and who knows how
that's
much
more
of
utilitarian.
Right. And yeah, who knows how much of that $1.2 billion is actually reaching them. It's hitting how many other NGOs and how many other Washington, D.C. establishments before that money gets there. And what are they left with when it does get there that actually would go to help the people there? And not just funding Hamas. And obviously, when the money does get there and Hamas controls that area, they're going to use it for what they want, of course.
Yeah.
So basically, we're funding terrorism, and we're funding our allies. We're funding terrorism. We're funding
Everything.
We're funding these NGOs. Yeah, we're funding the social engineering aspect of everything. And a lot of it has been infiltrated by the CCP. And it's really working their agenda.
And that's, I've long said that the U.S. is a captured operation, and I believe that to be the case. Mm-hmm. All right, we only have a couple of minutes left. Believe it or not.
I wish they would just come out and say that as well. I wish that...
Really?
I wish people would really just start hammering down that fact and really pull the curtain back. Hopefully we'll start seeing some of that with Bongino and Cash and some of these people in the positions of Trump's cabinet now. But as it goes right now, I mean, we're seeing what's happened, but there's no accountability. We're not funding it now anymore, but why was it happening? What was the cause?
There's got to be signatures on these. I want the names.
Yeah, did it go? Yeah, where did it go? Who has it now? So many questions that you see these contracts and Doge exposing all of it. But where the hell did all the money go then? Who has it right now? It didn't disappear. It's not, you know, we paid it out, and what? They don't have any idea where any of that money went. That's crazy. It's insane.
Flipping ridiculous. Folks, I want to thank you for hanging with us. Folks in the chat, thank you very much. Maxwell came down and wanted to thank you as well, the Maxwell and Lady the Studio Dog, both of them, and of course Josh Mez. Kind of going back to where we started together, I want to ask you, what's your prediction with respect to the release of the information? Are we going to, is Bondi going to just, play us? Are we being played still? Or what's your prediction? What's going to happen tomorrow and then the days ahead? Are we going to see what we asked and what we deserve to see? Or are we going to get strung along and not see anything? What's your prediction?
Ultimately, I think we're you know, we're in a battle with the establishment, with the bureaucracy, with the deep state. And it's, you know, I don't know if we're going to get everything that we want. Hopefully we'll get enough to figure it out. That's the thing, is once we get a few pieces of the puzzle, we're pretty good at putting the pieces together and figuring out for ourselves. It's just a matter.